We begin the current daf in Masechet Tzivos, daf Kuf. We begin 9 lines down from the Talmud of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, the Mishnah had spoken about a case of when a Kohenes, the wife of a Kohen, and her maidservant, their children get mixed up. So you have two boys now, two men that it's not clear if he's an Eved or if he's actually a Kohen. So one of the halachas the Mishnah said that we require is that Chalkin Ke'echad, that they can only get that Truma from the granary, from the Beis HaGranos, if they come together. And the reason is, as the Gemara had explained, it's going according to that opinion that holds that we don't allow an Eved to come by himself to the Beis HaGranos, because they might be Malim Truma Liyuchsin. If people see him getting Truma from the Beis HaGranos, they might assume that he's a Kohen, and then he might have all the privileges that are just for Kehanim, which that's not available for an Eved. And therefore, we don't let an Eved come by himself, so therefore both of them have to come together, because he might actually be the Eved, and then we might be Malim from Truma to Yuchsin. Now, additionally, the Gemara brought down a braisa that not only is an Eved forbidden to have his Truma given to him by Beis HaGranos, but actually there were 10 people. Now, in that braisa, which the Gemara continues quoting from, the braisa said that regarding all these 10 individuals, although they can't get it from the Beis HaGranos, but v'kulon mishargin lem lebetayim, but all of them, we send them their Truma to their house, they're allowed to eat Truma, chutz mitame, except for someone that's richly impure, we would penalize him because he wasn't careful about becoming tame. We don't even send the truma to his house. And v'naisi isha she'en hagenisle, and the man that married someone that's inappropriate for him, meaning from one of those d'apsula kahuna, those two cases, they don't even send the truma to the person's house. Now, the Gemara makes an inference. Aval oral, but one of the 10 cases was someone that was uncircumcised. Where there, they don't give it to him, but based on grandness, because as the Gemara said, mi'isi, it's repulsive for someone uncircumcised to be getting in front of everybody his truma. But, sounds like mishagrinale, but they do send the truma to his house. So the Gemara says, my time, what would the reason be for that? It's mishum da'anis, because although an oral is something that is repulsive, but it's something that's beyond his capability of choosing, and that is because it's told him that his older brothers had died from circumcision, so he cannot have it, so it's an einis. So therefore, we don't penalize him and say that, okay, you can't have truma. We won't give it to him by Beis HaGranos because he's ma'os, but we'll send it to his house. So if so, the Gemara asks, so tamei nami ha'anis, someone that becomes richly impure, it's also beyond his control. A sheretz fell on him or whatever it is that he came in contact with tamei, and therefore, there they should also send the truma to his house and not penalize him. But the Gemara says, no, there's a difference. Hai nafish einzei. Someone that his brothers died, that's beyond his capability of ever having within his control. So there's a lot of einus. So although, yes, someone that became tummy, you might say it's an einus. What can I do? I was walking by and someone threw a sheretz, but it's not so much an einus. If you really, really cared, you might have been able to prevent that, and therefore the Rabbanan penalized and said you should be more careful, and therefore they don't even send the truma to his house. Related to this previous braisa and this discussion, the Gemara brings Tarbal and the braisa. As we said in the previous braisa, from the 10 people that we mentioned, a slave and a woman, we don't apportion to them their truma by the granary. However, the braisa does say, but in a place where they do apportion it to them, then they give to a woman first, and they let her go first, and then would come the man. I think Maris might come, but how do we interpret this braisa? First, the braisa says in chalkin, then it says, oh, but in the place where they are chalik, then the woman goes first. So I think Maris is hachakam, and this is what the braisa is saying. When it says b'malkim shechalkin, it wasn't going back on truma, it was saying in general. But however, something that they do apportion to women, for example, b'malkim shechalkin maiser ani, in a place where they're apportioning out maiser ani, where that's done inside a house in the city, so there's no problem of yichud because there's people around. And the other reason why they don't give her truma, which is because of grusha, that doesn't apply to maaser ani, because any poor woman could get maaser ani. So that's something that they do apportion to women. Then, noisnli isha tchila, then you would give it to the woman first, before you would give it to a man, like in that case was the eved. My time, what's the reason? The Gemara says, mishom zilusa, because of the degradation of a woman, it's degrading for her to have to stand there amongst all the men. It's more appropriate to first give the woman, let her go, and then deal with the men. So related to this, the Gemara says, Amar Rava, he says, Mereisha, originally, Kiaba also gavra ve'itzel ledina kamoi, when there would be a man and a woman with their own separate court cases, meaning the man was a claimant in one case and the woman was a claimant in another case, but it wasn't between the man and the woman. So Havasharina tigrid the gavra bereisha, so I would first deal with the man's case to conclude his case, and then I would deal with the woman and her case. And the reason, the logic I had was because I said, a man is busy, he has mitzvahs he has to take care of. The woman is not obligated in the mitzvahs as such as Magurama, so therefore let him go, he has more important things to do, and then I'll deal with the woman. However, kivin de shaman alaha, once I heard this halacha, shereen the tigre de itza bereshai, so I first take care of the court case of the woman, and then the man. My time, Mishum Zilus, as we said, because it's more degrading for the woman to have to sit around out in the open with all the people than the man, and therefore he first took care of what she needed, and then the case of the man. Now, the Gemara continues explaining on Mishnah regarding this case that we discussed about where the Kehanas and the Shifchas children get mixed up. So the Mishnah says, Higdila Taruvah, so when this mixture, when these two boys grow up, so then the Mishnah says, "V'chulu b'shichur zeh," that they then free each other, because we don't know who's the master, who's the slave. So they free each other so that they're both Jewish men. And then they're limited in what type of a woman they can marry, but then they can marry at least those which are k'sher l'kuhuna. Now that the Gemara asks, "Shichru?" The terminology of the Mishnah that says that then they can free each other sounds like iboy in. If they want to, they could. Iloy boy iloy. But if they don't want to, they don't have to. Meaning that we don't force them to free each other. But is that the case? Vamai, why would that be? Lisa Shivcha in the Yachl. In their current state before they free each other, they can't marry a maidservant because maybe he's really a Kohen. And Baschorin in the Yachl, he can't marry a Jewess because maybe he's an Eved. Now, there's a Mishnah that taught that someone that's half slave, half free man, meaning when there was two owners and one freedom and one didn't, that the halach is kaif in this rabbi, we force the master to make him a free man. And the reason was, for this reason exactly, because he can't marry this, he can't marry this. What do you mean? The whole purpose of the world was to procreate and to fill up the world. So how would we allow these two people not to free each other if that's a halacha, where we do force people? So Rava says, you're right, Ema, you should say that shichur doesn't mean that if they want to, but rather, we force them and they have to free each other, again, because we mandate that they go ahead and get married and have children, and that's not possible in the current state of Taruvus. Now, the Mishnah additionally said that when they do free each other, we give upon them the stringencies of Kahanim and Yisraelim, because he might be the Kohen, and he might be the slave that was freed, which is like Yisrael. So for what halacha is that talking about, especially since the Mishnah already spoke about different areas of stringencies amongst the two of them? So my papa says, it's l'min chasam. It's in context of a flower offering that they bring in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is, when the non-Kohen brings a flower offering, so the stages that it goes through is, first is kmitzi that's done, which means that there's a fistful of flower offering that's sacrificed in the Mizbeach. And what's called the shiraim, the remnants are eaten, as the Pasuk says in Rikir Beis v'kamatz. And then, v'hanesheres t'menu yoichlu aron avonav. Now, however, a mincha is Kohen. When the Kohen brings a mincha, then there's no kmitza taken off because all of it is burnt on the Mizbeach. As the Pasuk says, kol minchas kohen, kol tia, it's totally sacrificed. Now, if one of these men that are from this mixture brings a mincha, so the halacha is, nikmetzes kemichas Yisrael. You have to take off a kmitza, a fistful, like the mincha of Yisrael, because he might be Yisrael. And a mincha that doesn't have the kmitza done on it is possible like an animal that wasn't slaughtered, which those are the parallels between a mincha and a behemoth. But the einin echeles kemichas kanim. However, the shiraim are not eaten like the mincha of a kain is, because the mincha's kain is totally burnt on the mizbeach, because maybe he's a kain. Now that the Gemara asks, but haketzad. So what do you do then with that remnant? You took a kemitza, you sacrificed a mizbeach. Now the rest, the shiraim, is not eaten, which is normally by Yisrael, is because it might be a kain. So what do you do with it? So that the Gemara says, Hakoyim it's karv ba'atzman, the fistful is sacrificed by itself. V'hashirayim kraven ba'atzman, and then the fistful and the remnants are then sacrificed by itself on Mizbeach. Well, that the Gemara asks, so that's okay if he's actually a Kohen. But if he's Yisrael, you're encountering the problem, Ikri Khan, you apply the halacha that koshim menuli ishim, whatever has from it that is brought on the fires, and that this is the remnants of it, Harehu b'bal taktiru, so then there's a negative prohibition of sacrificing it. And that is, how could we sacrifice the remnants to Shiraim? Maybe he's Yisrael. Hence, it's a Michas Yisrael, which makes it a full-fledged remnants. Now, there is a negative prohibition of sacrificing the Shirayim, as the Pasuk says, Leisektir mimenu ish la'Hashem, which literally means you shouldn't sacrifice of amit a fire to Hashem, but the interpretation of that is that whatever is ish la'Hashem, in other words, whatever had from it that was already parts that was sacrificed, which is by Mechas Yisrael, it's Kemitza, then the remnants are Bebal Taktiru. That's what the Pasuk says, Leisektir, you should not sacrifice it. So how can we sacrifice on the Mizbeach? It'll work if he's a Kayin, but you cannot. There's a negative prohibition if he's a Yisrael. So I'm going to be here to read the Rishim and he says, what you do is that you make a condition on the remnants and you say that if it's actually Minchas Yisrael that's not supposed to be burnt, you say that you're not bringing it as a mincha, as a sacrificing a flower offering. Rather, let it be like firewood to help burn the fires on the Mizbeach. As the Gemara says, Kribliyaz is like Kribliyaz. He says, the problem of Baal Taktiru is only for something that's being used as a carbon, which is for an aromatic pleasure, for so to speak, for Hashem, that's forbidden. And that's because the pasuk of Elam is Beach Loyal L'Reach Nichayach is written after that pasuk of L'Saktiru, which means to say that this prohibition of bringing the remnants and being makter it, meaning if it's not really supposed to be on the Mizbeach, but you bring it, that's the Isra of Leisaktiru. That's only if, as the next pasuk says, L'Reach Nichayach. But you could bring it on the Mizbeach if you bring it just as fuel, as firewood, not as a carbon. Now, this halacha of Rebbe Elazar is a Masechta Zevachim Daf Ein Zayin Amud Aleph, where that's in the context of a machlokes regarding when the limbs of a Karma Chatzos got mixed up with the limbs of a carbon oila. Now, problem is that all the limbs of an oila have to be sacrificed, whereas the flesh of a Karma Chatzos, there are parts of it that are eaten. So Rebbe Elazar says that what you do is you put all the limbs on top of the Mizbeach. Now, however, although the buster of a Chatzos is not allowed to be there, it's supposed to be eaten, those remnants are Bebal Taktiru. He says, don't worry, you look at it as if it's wood, as if it's fuel. And since your intention is not to be makter it, it's not haktar, and you're allowed to do that because we need to find a way that, because they might be oila pieces, which have to be sacrificed. So he says, so what you do is you consider it like wood, and therefore either way you're covered. However, the Chacham over there, Masechta Zevachim, argue, and they say that no. You do what's called Iber Tzura, which means that you wait till it gets spoiled, and then you can go ahead and burn it, because you can't go ahead and bring it on top of Mizbeach, because they don't consider this element of saying that it's like fuel. And therefore, if it's chatas, you're violating the Isra Baal Taktiru. So the Gemara says, fine, Hanich L'Rabbi Eliezer. That works for Rabbi Eliezer. What you're saying is what we would do, as we're saying this Chumri Kahanim V'Chumri Yisraelim, that we do what we do for Mincha V'Kayin and Mincha V'Yisrael. But El Rabbanan, Ma'ikalayim, according to Rabbanan, what are you going to say? According to them, you can't take the Shirayim and be makter it and say, oh, if it's not really supposed to be there, then it's like wood. As we see, they argue and say, you have to do Ibit Surah. So how are you going to interpret for them regarding this mincha of this person that's Safik Evet, Safik Kayin, that we do this process of the Shirayim on the Haktar, where you cannot bring it? So the Gemara says, you're right, for them, there would be a different resolution. The Avid La Kribalaza Rib Shimon. The Tanakh will learn the Braisa. Now this Braisa is talking about a Kayin that violated the Isra of being Metame the Mikdash, where that is from the three types of violations that you have to bring a carbon oil of a yard, which basically means to say, however wealthy you are, that's on how the carbon expensive has to be. Now, the Dali Dallas, the cheapest carbon he could bring if he's very poor, he brings what's called a Minchas Chayte, which is a flower offering of a sinner. Now, regarding a Minchas Chayte, it says that V'hoysela Koyin Kemincha, that if he's a Koyin, it should be like a Mincha, which the Gemara expounds to say that if the sinner in this oil of a yard is a Koyin, then his mincha now is like a regular Yisrael, which means to say, just like a mincha of a Yisrael, of a non-Kohen, does kemitza, does the fistful, so too the mincha s'chayte of a Kohanim will also have kemitza. Although generally it doesn't, it's just all sacrificed in Mizbeach, here it will be by mincha s'chayte. So the Gemara says that, oh, if it's like a mincha s'Yisrael, you would think that the remnants are eaten, that so too here. On that, the Gemara brings it, no, it says in the Pasuk, v'chol mincha s'Kohen kol tia, any mincha the Kohen brings is totally sacrificed, so how do you do it? What you do is that you take the kaimitz and you sacrifice it first. And then the remnants are separated, are also going to be sacrificed, but separately, because you do take a kemitza like a Minchas Yisrael. That's the opinion of Rib Shimon. However, the Raisa brings, as our Gemara quotes, Blazer Reb Shimon Amir, he says, HaKoimetz Karvel Atzma, he says, you're right, the Koimetz is brought by itself because you're doing a Kemitza, as it says, that the Koyin's Mincha of a Chayte should be like Yisrael, which you do Kemitza. But Vashiraim, the remnants, are not brought on the Mizbeach. Rather, Mispazrin al Beis Hadeshin. They're scattered on the place below, on the bottom, beneath, on the ground, by the near the Mizbeach, where that's the place where the Deshin, which is the Trumas Hadeshin, when the ashes of all the Karbanos in the middle of Mizbeach, which then they take off a select part of that, which is called the Trumas Hadeshin, and put it on the side of Mizbeach, and that's where the crop of certain bird offerings are put, which are near the Mizbeach. That's where you spread the remnants of this Mincha, where again, in the context of, we find by a Kayin, that his Minchas Chayte, you do with the remnants, you scatter there on the side of Mizbeach. Now, that the Gemara wants to propose, that's the same thing that we're going to say in our case, where if possibly he's a Kohen or possibly Yisrael, so if he's a Kohen, you're right, maybe you'd be able to sacrifice, but we're saying that no, we actually see that the Mincha of a Kohen can also be scattered on the bottom, as we find Reb Lezer Shimon says. Now, moreover, the Gemara says, and even Reb Shimon over there in the Abraisa, who argues on Reb Lezer Shimon, he doesn't argue on him regarding the halacha that he says that the shrine are not scared of Beis Hadeshin. Rather, he says that they're sacrificed on the Mizbeach. That's Ela b'minchas chayte shel kahana. That's only in that specific case of when the Kohens bring a mincha of a sinner's mincha, where he holds that all of it is the basa kravahi. All of it has to be sacrificed. And since it has to be sacrificed, which is the same as the mincha of a Kohen's nidava, so therefore he holds that they're also, that although yes, there's kmitza done for it, but the rest is sacrificed also, as we find kol tia. Now, however, what the Gemara wants to point out about, however, aval hacha, but over here, when you can sacrifice all of it, as we said, because the case we're talking about over here is the case of our Mishnah, where maybe he's a Yisrael, maybe he's a Kayin, so if he's a Zar, you can't go ahead and sacrifice all of it, because that's a violation of Bal Taktiru, where if it's a Minchas Yisrael, the remnants are not allowed to be sacrificed. Then the Gemara is saying, Afil Rabbanu Maidu, even Reb Shimon, the Rabbanu would agree that what you would do is that Mispazrin, you would scatter the rest of the Mincha, the Shirayim, and the Beis Hadeshin, and that works well according to everybody, based on the what we find, the precedent like this from Reb Lezer Reb Shimon, where although there are those who argue on him, but that's only by Minchas Chayte, because that's like a regular Minchas Kayin, where you would go ahead and sacrifice all of the Mizbeach, but here where it's not even for sure a Minchas Kayin, there even Reb Shimon would agree that what you do with the Shiraim is that you scatter on the side. And again, that's only because we're giving the Chormi Kahanim and the Chormi Yisrael. Chormi Yisrael is that you go ahead and you do the Kmitza, and the Chormi Kahanim is that you can't go ahead and eat it, but rather what do? Like we find in the precedent in Reb Lezer Reb Shimon, that a Minchas Kayin, when you can't sacrifice it, which is like in the case over here where he's a Zar, you go ahead and you put it a Beis Hadeshin. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah. Again, continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, is talking about when it's not clear the paternity or the mother of who this child is. So the Mishnah says, Mishle Shasa Achar Baile Shlesha Chadash. If a woman didn't wait 3 months after she left her first husband, Venisis Vyalda, now she gets married and she gives birth. Now you're running into trouble. Vein Yudua in Ben Tishla Rishon and Ben Shivala Achrin. So she goes and gives birth. She gets pregnant and within the first 2 months of her second marriage. And now, 9 months after she left her first husband, she gives birth. Now, it could be she conceived the right before she left her first husband, or it could be it's 7 months from her second husband. So the Mishnah says, Hayulabanim in Arishin Abanim in Asheni, if she had other sons from the first husband and other sons from the second husband, so Chaltsin Beloy Miyabin. They do chalitza and not yibam to the wife of this child who is not clear if he's the child of the first husband or the second husband. And the reason is, the children of the first husband do chalitza because maybe he was conceived by their father, but they can't do yibam because maybe he was from the second father, which makes the first father's children, his other brothers, only his maternal brothers, and not paternal brothers. Now, therefore, when you're only maternal brother, there's no het of yibum, but you still have the isur karis of eshasach, so they can't do yibum, but they have to chalitza. And so too for the brothers of the second husband, they're in the same predicament. Now, the Mishnah says, "B'chein hu lahem." Same thing works in the other way around. If the other brothers die and the Safik has to encounter them, so regarding their wives, he's chalitz v'lemayabim. He can only do chalitz, not do yibim again, because he might be only maternal brother, not paternal brother, and therefore violate the Issacharis, but might be a paternal brother, which does have the mitzvah of yibim. So you do chalitza and not yibim. Now, continuing on Talmud Beis, where the Mishnah continues and says, however, if hayulo achim in a rishon v'achim in a sheni, if he had paternal brothers from the first father and the second father, shaloimo isa'im, meaning that were not from his mother, so then hu chalitza miyabim, he can either do chalitza or yibim to the wives of the first father's children. And the reason is because if he's their brother, so then good. If he's not, because he's actually from the second, so then they're totally not related to him. Now, and moreover, is that you're not going to run into the problem of being his maternal brother, because we said that they were only his brother from his father, not from his mother. Now, Rashi points out, it must be talking about that he's the only available brother, where then you're not encountering a doubtful case of Yivam Lashuk, because if he's actually from the other father, then he's not related, and yes, there's no Isser, but she would be mandated to have a Zika to the rightful brothers, and so too for the wives of the second ones is the same type of situation where he's the only brother, hence he could do either Chalitz or Yibim. And the Haim, and the brothers of either father, Echad Chalitz Vech Miyab, what you do is that one does Chalitz and one does Yibim. In other words, either the sons of the first father or the sons of the second one, first one of them does Chalitz, and then the other one from the other father does Yibim, and then the same thing. If the second one is rightfully the Yavam, so then that's good. If not, well then he's totally unrelated. And regarding the problem of Yavam Lashok, you took care of that because you already had the other father's children do Chalitza. So either one. We don't know which one is which, but if the first one was the Yavam, so they already did Chalitza, and the second one is okay, it's Nachas. And if the second one is the Yavam, so the first one didn't do anything, and therefore the second one could do a full-fledged Yibam. Now the Mishnah continues again regarding this case where we're not sure if he's 9 months from the first or the 7 months from the second one. If ha'yeched Yisrael ve'eched kain, if one of the fathers was a Yisrael, a non-kain, and one was a kain, so we're not sure if he's a kain or Yisrael, so neisha isha ru the kain, he has to marry a woman that's fit for a kain, meaning he can't be a grusha, a chalutza. Ve'im etam le'mesim, he cannot be metam et mesim, again maybe he's a kain, but ve'im nidma in the sevik yisabam, if he becomes tamei, he does not get the 40 lashes, because maybe he's not a kain. And in eichel b'truma, he can't eat truma, because maybe he's not a kain. Vim ochel ein misham karmel chaimish, but if he does eat, he does not pay the penalty, because he could say that he is a kain. Ve'ein ocheilek al agarin, he does not get to have a portion by the granary, because maybe he's not a kain. U'meicha ha'truma v'adam shaloi, and however, when he separates his truma, he gets to sell it to a kain, and he gets the money, because maybe he's a kain, so monetarily he gets to hold on to it. Now, the next part of the Mishnah, as we already explained in the previous Mishnah, which there's different interpretations in Rashi, he does not get to split the portions of those, which some of the gifts of Bekatcha HaMikdash, meaning in the hides that are given out in the base of Mikdash. They don't give him to sacrifice in a karbanis in the base of Mikdash. But they do not take away from his own kachim. He gets to decide, again, monetarily. And he's exempt from certain matnas kahuna, which is the four-legged jaw and the bum and the different type of stomach that there is in the animal, which again is a monetary law that he could claim he's a kain if someone wants to claim that he's not. And his firstborn animal, which is one of the matnas kahuna, it would be problematic for him if it's a bechair tam, because that has to be sacrificed and then the kahanim have to eat it and he might not be a kain. So he lets it graze until it develops a blemish, and then he can go ahead and eat it. And as we explained previously, that we give him the stringencies of Kahanim and those of Yisraelim. Now, Mishnah says, if Hayush named Kahanim, if both of these fathers, which we're not sure who his father is, both of them were Kahanim, well then, he obviously does the Avayda, but who Oina Leim. So, because of a doubt, stringently, we say that when either one of these fathers die, he's halachically considered like an einin, l'chumra, because maybe it was his father that died. And on the day that his father dies, he's forbidden to eat from kachim, and here maybe he had aninus, so therefore he, for either one that dies, he's considered einin. And similarly, v'heim einin in my love, if he dies, so then both of those fathers are l'chumra, forbidden to eat from kachim, because maybe their son died. Now the Gemara is going to ask, how could it be that both fathers are alive when the son is dying? That if you're going to say it's because the first father had divorced the woman and then she moved on to the second husband, but then why would it be that we say that, as the Mishnah is about to say, that hu ein metama lehem, that he cannot be metama to them? Why would he not be able to metama to the first father? If he's his son, then good. And even if he's not his son, if his father had divorced his mother who then married a kohen, that makes him a chal, because a kohen that married grusha makes him a chal, and then he's permitted to be metama. So the Gemara will explain exactly how we understand this case. But either way, the Mishnah continues, says, so hu ein metama lehem, since it might not be his father, so he cannot be metama to either one of them. Vehem ein metama lehem, they cannot be metama to him, because again, it might not be their son. Hu ein yerush a son. In any case, he does not inherit any one of the fathers, because either one of the inheritors will say, go to the other one. Bring a proof that you really are brother. Avahem yerush a son. But they, the two fathers, they inherit him because who's stopping them? In other words, there's no one else that lays claim to his inheritance besides one of these two fathers, and that's what's called Maman Hamutl B'Safik. It's a doubt who is the father. So that's the halach of Chilk, and they split it amongst each other. Upatra al-makasiv al-kalasiv shal-zev shal-zev. However, the son is exempt, although if a child hits or curses his father, so there's a penalty for that. However, this child is exempt because you can't prove that he cursed or hit his father because we don't know who his father is. And the Mishnah says, Oyle b'mishmari shalzeh v'shalzeh. However, he can go ahead, he does the avodah, the service in the Beis HaMikdash, by either one of the mishmaris of these doubtful families that he's part of, and the families cannot stop him. However, ein chaylik, he does not get to shear in the karbanis that are split amongst the kahanim, because each mishmer could say, no, go to the other one, you're not from our family, they're from that family. And the Mishnah concludes, however, if both of these fathers were in the same mishmer, that is, the kahanim are split into 24 different mishmeres, 24 different groups, which they have their own weeks, if it's from the same mishmer, then mimman avshach, he takes one portion, because either way, he's from that mishmer. Now the Gemara clarifies that in our Mishnah we said that which was on the top of this Amid, that if he had brothers from the first father and from the second one, which was not from his same mother, so the Mishnah said that regarding the brothers, when this Safik dies, one of the father's children does Chalitza, and one of them does Yibam. So the Gemara clarifies it's Davka Mechlitz. It has to be the first one of the father's children does Chalitza, V'had Yibumi, and then the other one is the one that goes ahead and does Yibam. Aviyivumi B'Reish Eloi. But to have one of them do Yibam first and then the other one Chalitza, that you can't do. And the reason is the Kapaga B'Yivama L'Shuk, because you might be encountering the Yivama of the other one, because it really might not be your brother, it might be the other father's son's brother. And therefore, if you're doing Yibam first, you're going to be violating the Issa of Yivama L'Shuk. So first you do Chalitza. And either way, if that was the real Yavam, so Chalitza permits her to marry someone else. And if it wasn't, so then the second one anyways is doing the rightful Chalitza to his Yivama. Now the Gemara will introduce the following halacha from Shmuel, which will relate to the topic of our Mishnah. Amar Shmuel, he says, Asar kahanim aimdim. If you have 10 kahanim standing in one place, upirsh echad mehem ubal. One of the kahanim went to a side place, and he cohabited with a woman. So, havalad shtuki. The child is what's called a shtuki. Now, the literal translation of shtuki means from the word of shtika, that we silence this kid when he says, tati, tati, we say, be quiet, because we don't know who your father is. Now, although that usually has certain halachic ramifications, in this case, as Rashi points out, it's obvious that the child is going to be kosher, lover, lakal. Not like as we would assume a general shtuki, where we don't even know if his father was a kosher. Here we know that he's definitely kosher because we know that he's the child of a kohen that cohabited with a single woman. We just don't know who his father is. So the Gemara asks, so my shtuki, what does it mean that we silence him? What is the ramification that we don't know who his father is? If it's that you silence him from his father's estate, meaning he can't claim to be from the estate of any of these kahanim because we don't know who is really his father. That's pshita. The Shmuel have to say shalacha. Of course, do we know who his father is? So Ella rather means we silence him from the ability to do the avoida as a kohen in the Beis HaMikdash. And that is, although regarding yuchsin, about lineage, that is, he's permitted to marry a woman that a kohen is on that status because he's a kosher, but he's pasul b'avodah. So the Gemara says, my time, why would he pasul b'avodah? He's a regular kohen. We just don't know who his father is. The Gemara says, Amar Kra, the pasuk says in Mamidbar, that it says lazar acharab, that it should be for him and his children afterwards. It says a bris kuhuna sa'ilim, a covenant of kuhuna forever. Now, what that means is the word achrav seems to indicate that after him, meaning that we can recognize that this is his child, that we need to have a child that has a specific lineage, that we know who his father is, to take achrav, and that you don't have here in this case, and therefore he's puzzled from doing the avodah. Now that maskev Rav Papa, Rav Papa asks on this exposition of the word achrav. It says, El me'atik ab Avram dechsev, but regarding Avram Avinu, that it says in the pasuk in Bereishis, that lias l'chol elikim olazaracha acharecha, that Hashem says to Avram, I'm going to be a God for you and your children that come acharecha after you. Well, hasam ma'kamazal le'rachmano, there, what is Hashem warning Avram Avinu? In other words, since you just interpreted regarding the avoida of kahanim, that you said acharav, you expound regarding psulik kahuna, that if it's, we don't know clearly who his child is, he's pasul. But here, what type of a psul would you expound regarding Avram Avinu acharav? Because regarding a regular Yisrael, acharav is not a problem if you're talking about psulim, because if you have 10 non-kahanim, ksherim that are standing, and one of them goes and bees bala isha, the child has no problems because there's no avoida to say there's pasul for. So if you're interpreting acharav regarding psulim, what type of psul would there be regarding Avram Avinu? So I think my answer is hachikamalei. No, this is what Hashem was telling him. He was telling him that don't you or your children marry a non-Jewess or a maidservant, because then your children will not be attributed after you. It won't be acharecha. And that is, as the Gemara says in the third paragraph of Masechta Kedushin, that a maidservant, her children take after her lineage. As it says in the pasuk, Isha vilodeha, the children become servants like the mother. So too by a non-Jewish woman. The pasuk says, "Ki yasra es bincha." Don't have your children intermarrying, because they're going to take your child and have them go after the idols. With the Gemara, there expounds that it's your son that's from a Jewish woman that marries a non-Jewish man that's called bincha, but your son that comes from a non-Jewish woman is not called your son; rather, it's called her son. So that's what Hashem is warning Avram Avinu, that it should be acharecha, that they shouldn't marry the non-Jewish or a maidservant, because they're not going to be considered Jewish people. Now, that the Gemara asks Meisvei. The Gemara asks on this halacha of Shmuel from the following brisa, which the brisa is talking about when a man married his brother's wife that died without any children. In other words, he did Yibum within 3 months of when his brother had died and gave birth. Now, it's not clear the paternity of the child, because it was 9 months after the brother died. That was 7 months after the Yavam had married her, that she gave birth. Now, it could be it's from the first husband, it could be from the second one. So that, the Brisa says, Rishon ro lis kohen gadol. The first child born from that union of the Yavam and this not clear Yavam or not, because if it really was a child from the first one, then it's really Eishes Achiv. Either way, that child's going to be fit to even be a kohen gadol. And the reason is, as the Gemara explained in Perek HaChaylitz, is because if it's from the first husband, so then he was born kosher from the first husband. And if he's not, if it's from the second one, well then he's born kosher from a Yavam. But regarding the other children, that would be problematic, because maybe she is a Eishes Achiv, because there's no Yibam, and then if he continues that relationship with her, the children are going to be Mamzer. So it says that the first child, no matter which is his father, either way is fit to be a Kohen Gadol. And that the Gemara asks, according to Shmuel, but you said you need to have specifically knowing who his father is, and you don't have that over here, so how can he even do the avoid in the first place, let alone become a Kohen Gadol? So the Gemara answers, Zara miyuchas acharav dirabbanan. This halacha where we're saying that you need to have the child's specific lineage of who his father is, that's rabbinic halacha. The krol, though we brought down the pasuk of acharecha, that's a smach to biyama, that's just an allusion to it from the pasuk. But when did Rabbanan make this gezera of if you're not clear who your father is, that you're supposed to avoid it? That's biznus, when there was an out of marriage type of relationship. But when it was through marriage, then Rabbanan weren't gezera, and therefore here, where it's not clear who the paternity of the child is, but since it was with full fledged marriages, therefore the child actually is fit to be even the Kohen Gadol. Now, however, the Gemara continues asking, ubiznus migaz Rabbanan, is it true, however, that even by znus, when it was an out-of-wedlock marriage relationship, that then it's going to be forbidden for this kain that we don't know who his father is to do that vayda. But Ratnan, we learned in our Mishnah, and that's why we introduced this halacha of Shmuel. The Mishnah said, Mishle shasachar bai lishleisha chadashim, a woman that didn't wait 3 months till after she left her first husband, then this is v'yaldi, she got married, she gave birth. So then we have a certain halacha, but before that, the Gemara clarifies. My achar baila, what does it mean that it was after her first husband? Ilema achar misis baila, if you think it means regarding that it was after the death of her first husband, well then, ema seifa, look at the seifa, you can't say that. Because the seifa in our Mishnah said, hu einin aleihem, this child is not clear who his father is, so he has to have the customs of aninus when they die, because maybe it is his father, although both of them are kahanim, and therefore he's a kohen, but we're not sure who his father is, and therefore he cannot be metamed to them. But he has to have the halachas of aninus. Vehim oinin olav, and they have the halachas of oinin on him, because maybe it's his child, so he can't eat from kachim that day. So the Gemara asks, bishlim hu oinin aleim, we understand the halacha that he would have to accustom himself aninus on them. Mishkachas law, it could even work, benisuin, that in other words, that the first one had died, and then the second one had married her, you could have that although the first one died, so if the first one already died before the second one even married her, which only later was the child born, so how could we ever have this child have to have aninus when his first father, maybe his first father died, if he's already dead before the second one marries? That's not a problem, because you could have it by velikur atzal mistakamo, when the bones of the dead father are gathered, even that could be even after many, many years that he's dead, that this person that's a suffix would have to have the halachas of Oinin and be Usher and Kachim. That's because, as the Mishnah says in Masechta Pesachim Daf Tzadi Aleph and Beis, that if someone hears regarding a relative that had died, or that the Malakar Atzamis, they gathered the bones of his father, so then he could only eat Kachim in the evening, but the entire day he does actually have the status of an Oinin. So it's feasible to have him to be an Oinin on them, even though the first father has been dead for many years, as we said that's the case, that she married the second man after the first one had died. But Elohim Oinin Olav, but regarding saying that they have to be an Oinin for him when this suffix dies, Heichem Mishkachas Lo, how can you have it? Kamo Misli, the way you just described the case, the first one's already dead. How could it be an Oinin if he's dead before the son is ever born? So there the Gemara says, Vela Begrusha, so what would you say? That's talking about that she was divorced. The first one, the first kind she was married to, then get divorced. And then she married another kind. And then this child's born, we don't know if it was 9 months from the first or 7 months from the second one. But that's problematic because umayachar baila, what would it mean after her first husband? It would mean achar get baila, after the get of her first husband. But aim is seifa, look at the seifa. The next halacha from what we just quoted in the Mishnah says, hu ein metame lahem, he cannot be metame to them, because maybe it's not his father and the kohen could only be metame to shiva kreva. Veheim ein metame lahi, and they cannot be metame to him, because maybe it's not really the son. So again the Gemara says, we understand that they cannot be metametim. Luchum has a stringency because the cholchad v'chad demelav berehu. Each one of these fathers, maybe it's not his son, and the kohen cannot be metamet to someone that's not one of his seven relatives. Elohu ein metamelahem amai. But why can he not be metame to them? In other words, as the Gemara explains, bishleim l'sheni lemetamele. We understand why to the second father he would not be metamet to. The reason is because maybe he's actually son of the first one. And he's a valid kohen, and the valid kohen cannot be metame to someone that's not his father. But the first father, who's maybe his father, he should be able to be metame, either way you look at it, and that is because ibrehu shabakom metamele. If he's really his son, okay, so he could make himself impure in the burial process of his father. Now, even if he's a child of the second husband, still Shabbat Kometamele, he would still be allowed to be metame to the first one. Why? Because the Chalal who, the way we just described the case was that his mother was divorced from the first one. A Kush that marries a Kayin, the child's a Chalal. A Chalal is allowed to be metame himself. So either way, he should be allowed to be metame to the first one. So why does it say that he cannot be metame to them, including him in the first one? Say Elalav, and this is the conclusion of what the Gemara is trying to prove why this is difficult on Shmuel. Must be talking about the biznus. She wasn't married to the first one and then got widowed. She wasn't married and then got divorced. Actually, these two men that were a month or two apart, that now we're not sure the paternity of her child, which act of biznus it was from, she had znus, out of wedlock relationship, with both of these men. What does it mean, so after her first husband? It means achor boyala, after the man that she cohabited with. And then she went right away and was with another man. Now we're not sure who's the real father. Now, that's why the son cannot be metame to them. Because either way, although it wasn't a marriage, but actually the kohen is a kohen kasher, even though it was born out of wedlock. And also, you find that he'll have to have the status of oinin on them and them on him, because both of them, he's fit to be their child, and therefore he would have to accustom himself to the halachas of oinin. So that's obviously what the case is talking about, that who that in our Mishnah, where she went from the first man to the second man, and now we're not sure is it 9 months from the first or 7 months from the second one, is that she had znus with both of them. Now, V'ketani Seifa, and yet still the Seifa of our Mishnah says that when they're both Kahanim, Oyle b'mishmer shalzeh b'shalzeh, that he can go ahead and do that Vaida in either one of their groupings, even though we're not clear who his father is. So therefore, v'tiyuf t'dishmul, that seems to be a refutation of Shmuel, who he said clearly when it was at least through Znus, and now you don't know who his father is, that he said that there's rabbinic halacha that says he's rabbinic doing the avodah. Here we see clearly from a Mishnah that he's allowed to do the avodah. Some of Shmaya says that no. Truthfully, we would say that it's not talking about a case of Znus. Because as Shmuel had said, if it was through Znus, then he would be possible to do the avodah. Now, then you wouldn't be able to say, Oyle b'mishmar shalzeh v'shalzeh. So what's the case talking about? That we could have a child who could be alive when his two fathers are dying, and however he would not be able to metama to them because he would be a kohen kasher, which are the reasons why we couldn't say it was either when she was widowed from the first one or divorced from the first one. That, he says, is talking about a case, we're talking about where there was an orphaned girl that either her mother or her brothers married her off, which is only a rabbinic type of a marriage, where she could do what's called miyun. She could refuse her first husband. Now, what that does is that retroactively that undoes the whole marriage she ever had to this man that she was married to as a minor. Now, after she did that miyun, she didn't wait a period of 3 months. That is, within 3 months, she already got married to someone else. And now it's not clear, is it 9 months from the first or 7 months from the second one? And that's okay, because that's through marriage. Miyun is not znus, although retroactively it comes out that she wasn't married to him, and therefore you don't run into the problems of, so how'd she get out of the first husband? If he's dead, so what does it mean that he's not doing aninus on the son? He's dead already. No, he's still alive. You don't run into the problem of grusha, which is that why can he not, the suffix not be metam of the first one if he's a chol? She wasn't divorced. So therefore, we work out all the different angles if she's doing miyun. Now, upon that, the Gemara asked, you can't say it's about a case of miyun. Because, enes miku yalda, the case is obviously talking about that she did miyun from the first husband. And then she's going to the second man. Now, we're not clear, is the child from the first one or from the second one? But on that, the Gemara asks, it can't be. A woman that's doing miyun is too young to have children. So obviously, it wouldn't be such a case, because then she wouldn't be able to have doubt as if it's from the first husband. Because Vatani Rav Bibi Kamid Rav Nachman, as we learned, Rav Bibi taught in front of Rav Nachman the following braisa. Shalosh noshim mishamshes b'meich. There are three women that can use some type of a contraception, some type of a cloth, a wad of cotton that they're allowed to put into Eisim Makim, that they do not become pregnant. And they are a katana, a minor, a mu'ubaris, a woman that's pregnant, umenika, and a nursing woman, as he explains. Ketana shemetisa b'vetamis. The reason why a minor is allowed to do that when she has cohabitation is because maybe she's going to become pregnant, and then she's too young and fragile and she's going to die. Mu'ubaris, a pregnant woman, because shemetasa u'besandal, maybe the fetus that she's carrying, you'll have the second fetus that will be conceived now, which was obviously a Talmudic possibility, which will then push the first embryo and cause a deficiency in that first one. As Gemara explains in Masechtas Nida, that's called, that the first one will be a sandal. That's a term that's used when it has that deformity. And the case of Manika, when she's a nursing woman, is Shematigmalis Benaviyamis, because she's going to become pregnant, it'll stop her from nursing, and then the child that she's nursing will die because it won't have the nourishment, the sustenance. Now, on that, the Baraisa explains Ve'ezi Kitana. And what is a minor that we say that she might become pregnant and then die? That's from the age of 11 till 12. But if she's under the age of 11 or older than 12, then she could go ahead and have regular bia. That's the opinion of Reb Meir, because younger than 11, she's not becoming pregnant, and older than 12, she can handle the pregnancy. But then in that delicate age of 11 to 12, she could become pregnant, but then she's going to die. So therefore, she could use a meich. The Chachamim, they argue with Reb Meir. They say, achazu ba'achazu mishameshes kedarka v'lechas. Either one of these situations, she can go ahead and have regular cohabitation without using a meich. And although there's a sakanas nefashas, but from heaven they'll have mercy and she won't die if she becomes pregnant. Shemalek says a passing in Tehillim, Shemar Pesam Hashem, Hashem watches and safeguards those which are innocent and don't know any better, and therefore there's no reason to be concerned to require a meich. Now, one thing that we see from here is that the age of Miyun, we know that Miyun is only when a girl is a minor, up until age 12. But beyond that, she can't do Miyun. Now, however, under age 12, if she's becoming pregnant, she's dying. If she's under 11, she's never becoming pregnant at all. It's only over 12 where we say that if she becomes pregnant, she's not going to die. So how can you have the way we're describing the case of a Mishnah to answer Rishmul, that it's talking about a case of Miyun, and that's how she got out of the first one to go to the second one within 3 months, and now we don't know the paternity of the child, but it can't be, because if she's doing Miyun to the first one, she could not have been able to conceive, because Miyun's only up till age 12, and under age 12, a woman cannot have a viable pregnancy. So rather, the Gemara says, Meshkachas la b'kiddushei tois. You can have the case to resolve Shmuel where a man got engaged to a woman with certain conditions which weren't fulfilled, which means to say that there was an error in the kiddushin. And what that ultimately does is that she leaves his domain without a get. But she gets married within 3 months. Now you have a case where this doubtful child will see the death, could be alive when his two fathers die, and that he's a Kohen Kosher. He's not a Chol, because she wasn't divorced from the first one. She's actually was never married. But it wasn't either through his Nus, because the intention was, it was through a valid marriage. It just was not fulfilled because of Kiddushi Tois. Now that's why he cannot be Metame to them. And however, he is Oilu B'Mishmar, he could do that Vaida, as we said, for Shmuel, because that's not Znus, since it was through marriage, so the Rabbanu would never Gezer in such a case. As the Gemara says, this is based on the Halacha of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. The Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, and pausing my midbar, that says, and this is what we're basing the premise of this Halacha of Kedushi Tois, where that means to say that if you're married for many years, but we find that the Kedushin was an error, so then we say that you leave without a get. There's no kedushin to require a get. And again, therefore, that was still a marriage. I mean, in other words, it wasn't a full-fledged act of isnus to give a rabbinic decree to penalize the son that he can't do that avodah when he doesn't know who his father is. And therefore, that would be the case that we're describing, where you don't run into the problems of gerusha or almana and the problem of isnus. So that's based on Rabbi Shmuel that expounds the pasuk of Ma'amidbar that says, v'hila nitfasa. It talks about a case where a woman has an adulterous affair, and she wasn't forced, then she's forbidden to her husband. The inference is, but if she was forced, then it's an oinus, and then she's still permitted to her husband. Now, what Rabbi Shmuel expounds, it says, v'hila nitfasa, that she wasn't forced. Now, her, sounds like it's excluding someone. What it's saying is that only a full-fledged wife, if she wasn't forced and she had an adulterous affair, then she's forbidden to her husband. But the inference is, there is a different woman, even if she wasn't forced, in other words, that she went and willingly had an adulterous affair when she was married to her husband, that's still muteris, she would still be permitted to her husband. Now, what type of woman would that be? Where it comes out that the first marriage she had to her husband, who she was mizana when she was married to him, turns out the kedushin that she had with him was actually in error. There was something that was from the conditions in the marriage which wasn't there. Even if she's carrying a child on her shoulder from that husband, she could still do mian and go on. In other words, she could still refuse the marriage. The marriage will be undone. Even it doesn't literally mean mian, which is up till age 12. She could even be older than that and have a child. And that's because this kedushi tois. Now, since she doesn't need a get from him, turns out she wasn't really his wife. Now, even if she was mezana with him, it comes out that really she was a single girl when she was mezana with that other man. And that's why she's still permitted to her husband, because now she'll go back and do a full-fledged kedushin with him. Now, that's what the Gemara is comparing for here for Shmuel, how to explain the case of our Mishnah, where since here she's not a gerusha, because it was kedushin tois, and therefore she's permitted to the second husband, hence the child is not a chal, therefore he's forbidden to be metam lahen, even to the first one, because he is a full-fledged Kayin, and we don't know who his father is, and therefore, the Gemara resolves Shmuel's halacha, that he says that if it's through Nus, and you don't know who his father is, that he's puzzled to the Avaida, not contradicted from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is not talking about, as we said, for Shona Almana or Gerusha, but it's not even talking about the case of Nus, neither does it work out in the case of Mima Enes, but it's talking about the case of Kedushei Tois, where then it's feasible to have this case where she leaves the first husband, and within 3 months marries the second one, and then has a child who we're not sure who his father is, but if they're both Kahanim, then you have all the halachas that our Mishnah says.